The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 17th of August, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. I had to play that music again. It's something about Leo season, man. There are Leos everywhere. Everywhere. They come out. So I got some extra happy birthdays, special requests. I got to say happy birthday to my cousins on both sides of the divides, to Rhonda Seymour and to Nikki Butler Bethel. Yeah. Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday to Maria Govan. And happy birthday, because today is the day, I guess I got to say it again, to Sakani Nash and Jason Evans. Happy birthday. Also, the show got started a little late this morning, but of course, when Mr. Stubbs is in the place, you got to give them some time. Also, I don't want them to think that I'm jealous or bitter, because I just make wine myself. I make local fruit wine. At least I do that when BPL allows me to do it. Oh, boy, sometimes we are limited by the infrastructure of our country. Sometimes your individual dreams are limited by the collective capacity of the space in which you live. But I had shared with the gentleman just before they left studio that a couple of years ago, before the 2013 BEC debacle, where they couldn't keep the power on for more than 5 minutes, my little company, we made all kinds of local fruit wine, including three types of aubergine wine. That's eggplant wine for the fancy people. We made a white, a rosé, and a lager style wine. So I didn't want them to think I was petty or bitter pie like me, worrying about them selling wine in my ear time. No, sir. Plus, what a wonderful conversation they were having. And so good morning. Of course, I am a Hasty. I'm a part of the Hasty Hanna Tynes clan, and I am not allowed to drink while the sun is up. I used to think that was a national rule. Turns out it's just Hasty Hannas and Tynes. Good morning to the Hasty Hannas and Tynes crew. Good morning and blessings. Welcome this morning. I've got two guests joining me today. We're going to be talking about a variety of things. We're sort of going to be following up on some conversations we've been having already this week. We're going to be talking about Gender Equality and the Nationality Act. We're going to be talking about the right to free sanitary products that was just established in Scotland. We're going to be talking a bit about marital rape. We're going to be talking about gender equality, maybe gender and climate change. But this morning, I've asked Ms. Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas and Ms. Taitu Heron from the WAND unit at UWE in Barbados to join us this morning for this conversation. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Erin.
Hi, good morning, Ms. Wallace. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I think we're still waiting on Ms. Heron to join the conversation. No problem. So, Ms. Wallace, introduce yourself, please, and tell the audience a bit about Equality Bahamas.
Sure. I'm Alicia Wallace. I am a part of the Equality Bahamas team, and at Equality Bahamas, we promote women's and LGBTQI plus people's rights as human rights, and we center people in situations of vulnerability. So in all of our work, we're making sure that we're thinking about women, we're thinking about LGBTQI plus people, people with disabilities, migrants, especially those that are undocumented. We're thinking about people who are experiencing poverty, people living in the Family Islands who don't have the same access as people in New Providence do. So always thinking about these groups of people and how we can meet their needs and ensure that they are not left out of policymaking, of service provision, and programs that are being developed at the national level.
Awesome. Now, Ms. Heron, when she joins, we're going to be discussing a project, a report that she co-authored in the Eastern Caribbean called A Legislative Review of Restrictive Provisions Governing Women's Access to Abortion in the Eastern Caribbean. And she co-authored that with Anika Gray. It's a very interesting report. It's a very interesting paper. Alicia, has it been published yet? Can I share it with the wider audience, like on my on the show's Facebook page or Twitter account?
Yes, definitely. It has been published and made publicly available for a few years now. So this report, the research and the whole process was funded by the Equality and Justice Alliance, which was formed out of the UK government after Theresa May made a statement of regret about the role of the UK in Commonwealth nations and having very unequal laws that negatively impact, in particular, women and LGBTQI plus people. So a part of that was, you know, starting to make some repair by providing some resources and technical assistance for countries to reform, have some legislative reform. And a part of that process was this research within the region that focused on a couple of countries in particular.
Okay, that's awesome. All right, so the project that this sprung out of is looking at colonial laws or laws that sort of Britain would have left in place in its territories, but they have since changed in Britain itself, and examining ways to carve out a path towards changing, towards a legal shift?
Yes, exactly. So they're recognizing that, you know, this is on us. We've already made these changes because it was easy for us to do so, but a lot of these issues are enshrined in other countries' constitutions. A lot of them are pieces of legislation that are really rooted in some of the ideologies that we still cling to. Although we have our independence, we still hold on to certain ideas that came with colonialism. So we have a lot of religious fundamentalism. We have a lot of ideas about gender and the quote unquote roles that people are supposed to play based on who we perceive them to be. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Equality and Justice Alliance was formed. So it was a 2-year program that specifically provided assistance to governments, giving them funding and also working with civil society to provide some technical assistance toward legal reform that we know is very necessary in all of our countries.
Absolutely. Now, Ms. Wallace, I can beg you right now to make a note to please connect me with some of the stakeholders in that organizational space, because what a wonderful conversation to have. And I'm sort of thinking in one sense that we could sort of step outside maybe of this gender space and look at something like colonial laws pertaining to hair and dreadlocks and natural hairstyles for Africans. And
absolutely,
and discrimination, and how we can move towards changing that. But then I also think, is there a space where, upon examination, we may realize, like for instance, in India, Britain went in and essentially destroyed a number of trades, a number of industries, a number of indigenous cultural practices, like silk weaving, like producing and weaving silk, things like that. It's interesting the extent to which this discrimination arose out of a colonial space. For instance, if men were predominantly silk producers, I can very easily see the perpetuation of the idea that men shouldn't be doing work like that, to begin to eat away at this culture and to, you know, over hundreds of years eventually eradicated, you know, or destroyed a culture by saying things like, oh, no, men shouldn't be doing that. You know, in the same way we say, oh, men don't cook. Why are you cooking? That's a woman's job. You know, that it could have had a more specific political agenda attached to it.
Yes, political and economic agendas. And we can see how gender has been used in these ideas about masculinity and femininity, and the idea that these are total opposites and there's nothing between, used to control people as well as their political economies.
Wow, yes. You know, I think about the perpetuation of the idea that men are not nurturers in Caribbean states and like in the Bahamas. But the vast majority of men I know, whether they, you know, they live with their child or they have sort of part custody, they don't live with the child. They are the tenderest parents. They are nurturing. They, you know, they become soft to hold the baby, change the baby, sing to the baby. But we've perpetuated this idea that men are not nurturers, men are not good with babies, or even worse, that men don't want to be around their children, you know, and their very small infant children. And I think
I think we're seeing some changes in the way that people think about these things and the way that people behave within relationships and within family structures. I know in recent years I've been seeing quite a number of young men, I would say probably maybe mid to late 20s, who are fathers, speaking up about leave, about maternity leave, and not having sufficient family leave and having to use those 5 unpaid days and choosing to take vacation to be able to be home with the mother of the child and the child, to help with care and to actually participate in parenting as an equal parent,
right,
with equal responsibility.
And to be available and present at the most formative or important bonding moments, right? That the relationship that the child has with the parent is also dependent on the proximity of the parent to the child at birth, and in those first days, right? The skin to skin contact for the mother is so important, but also for the father, right? Like we think that that's just a mother thing, but for the father as well, that contact, the smells, the heartbeat, right? All of those things are also important. Alicia, we got a call. Somebody seems eager to get into this conversation. Let's take this call quickly. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning. I salute your day and your program.
Thank you.
Everything going to keep harmony with what we have to revive society. And as you mentioned about the tenderness of men,
mm-hmm.
I just give my grandson a bath. And we were in transit to stop at a meeting.
Yes.
And I was the first one to get a chance to connect with my first daughter because I was bawling so much in the labor room that they brought the baby and brought the baby to me before even the mommy got to see the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So times have changed.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for sharing. Because it's something I just observe, you know? It's something I just see. It's great for men to share that and have that space to share that. Because that's what we're working towards, right, Ms. Wallace? We're working towards creating an environment where we have equal and equitable access, right, for men and women.
Yes, most definitely.
All right, so let us get to this event that is coming up this Saturday. Is this the fifth installment in the CEDAW Convention Speaker Series?
Yes, this is the fifth session that we have in this series. The CEDAW Convention Speaker Series is focused on the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, mm-hmm. Which is also known as the Women's Bill of Rights. Uh-huh. And this is a really important international mechanism. It's a treaty body. It's under the United Nations. I think by now we should all know that we have a Bahamian member of the committee, Marion Bethel. And Marion has worked very closely with us at Equality Bahamas to ensure that this series goes on and we're able to access experts from the committee to walk us through the convention mm-hmm. bit by bit. Because we know that it can seem overwhelming thinking about these international mechanisms. What is a convention? What is CEDAW? What does it mean? Do I really have to read all of these articles by myself and figure it out? No, you don't. We're walking through them one article at a time, one article per month. So usually the third Saturday of the month at 10 in the morning, we are joined by an expert from the committee to really delve into what the article says, how it is interpreted by the committee, and the recommendations that have been made to different states, but in particular our state, the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
and what we need to do as a country, what the government needs to do to come into full compliance with CEDAW so that we have the realization of women's human rights. So this Saturday, we will be joined by Rhoda Reddock, which is a pretty big deal. Anyone who is in Caribbean spaces quite a lot, particularly gender spaces, and familiar with University of the West Indies, you know the name. And so she's from Trinidad and Tobago. She is on the CEDAW committee.
Yes.
And will be walking us through Article 5 with a focus on gender-based violence.
Absolutely. Let me give a quick bio for Ms. Rhoda Reddock. She is a fellow CAFRA member. And I have to say, Professor Rhoda Reddock from Trinidad and Tobago is an esteemed scholar of the Caribbean community. She is the seventh outstanding woman from the Caribbean community to receive the CARICOM Triennial Award for Women. She served as founder chair advisor of several organizations, CAFRA, Caribbean Association for Feminist Research and Action, the Global Fund for Women, and the Regional Advisory Committee of the Global Coalition on Women and AIDS, established by UNAIDS. In 2002, she received the seventh, the Caribbean Triennial Award for Women. She was Trinidad's nominee for International Woman of Courage in 2008. She was honored in her country's National Honors Award Ceremony in 2012. She is Emerita Professor of Gender, Social Change and Development and former Deputy Principal of UWE, St. Augustine Campus. And she also served as the head of the Institute for Gender and Development Studies, St. Augustine, from 1994 to 2014. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Reddock was elected to the UN CEDAW Committee for the period 2019 to 2023?
I'm not. I know that I think she was recently reelected for a second term, I believe.
Ms. Reddock.
Yes.
Yes, this is awesome. This is awesome. So just a phenomenal woman, tons of experience, working across a number of issues in the region, and it's a wonderful opportunity for anybody engaged in Caribbean studies and development studies, women in development, to have an opportunity to share, to hear, and to work with at this event.
Yes, we're really looking forward to it. And we know that many of our colleagues and friends throughout the region will be joining to hear from Rotaradoc and to have a better understanding of this particular article. I think it's really interesting for people who are within feminist organizations, women's organizations, and focusing on ending violence against women in particular, because the article doesn't necessarily spell out gender-based violence, but it is the one that is used to address that issue. So it'll be really interesting for people, especially those who want to engage with CEDAW more and who are interested in, for example, producing a shadow report.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, I don't want to invite people who are sort of hostile to the work that's being done into that space. But I'm saying for people who feel like they may not necessarily agree, but also feel like they may not necessarily know enough about the subject to make that determination. Is this a good space for learning?
It's a great space for learning, for asking questions, and just getting some clarity. And for people who are interested and not sure if that's how you want to spend, you know, an hour of your Saturday morning, and you want to kind of get a taste, you can check out the Equality Bahamas YouTube channel, where we have the previous five sessions that we've held. Mm-hmm. So one was with Patricia Schultz, who is a Swiss human rights lawyer, and she took us through Articles 1 and 2. That's a great place to start, not just because it's Articles 1 and 2, but because you get a real sense of what the convention is about and an understanding of what we mean when we talk about discrimination, mm-hmm, and what is meant by non-discrimination. So that one you can look for on the Equality Bahamas YouTube channel. And if you just typed in CEDAW speaker series, these events should pop up pretty easily, and they're all in one playlist. So it's quite easy to move through different sessions and just get a sense of what the events are like, what the presentations look like, and the kinds of questions and challenges that people bring up throughout the session.
All right. So the next on the list was Gender Equality, the Basics, right? And then Gender Equality in the Nationality Act. But I've got a text here. And the text is, morning, I can't wait for this law to pass because I carry in my youths to get their passport the same day. Something I was being turned around for years doing just because me and their mom ain't married. Me alone couldn't put in for their passport, as simple as that. It's not easy on man out here. I think that's possibly an example of a gender inequality. But Ms. Wallace, I have a call as well. Let's get to that call, and then we could get back to the responses to that text. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good day to Sister Kinaway, along with you, Aaron, pretty ice cream.
Good morning. Now, listen, Bremen, at some point, somebody got asked me if you telling me I have pretty eyes every day is a gender inequality, you know.
Why is it?
Because they say, like, Miss Green have sense. She come to talk about things, but every day you call, you just as mentioned my eyes.
Well, if they have a problem with that, they got to look to them within themselves or look to God. I can't help them.
I got you, Brayman. How you doing today?
I'm holding, thank God. The only thing is we need justice, law, and order in the Bahamas, which we doesn't have. But what I want to ask, mm-hmm, your panel, right? The script in which you had read, it talked about social change, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what type of social change that they want to establish. Secondly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before I make a comment, I want to know their position on what you would call abortion and the type of abortion in which they would speak of. Then when you tell me that, I don't want to make a comment.
Okay. I can't guarantee you get all that airtime, but Ms. Wallace, so when we talk about creating policies to positively impact the lives of women, girls and boys and men, right? What are the social changes that you intend to cause or that you hope to see?
There are a lot of social changes that we need to see. I think the simplest way to kind of capture a lot of them is to say that we need to change the way that we think about ourselves and each other and our communities. and stuck outside right there. Of these narrow boxes. Let me make my point before I get cut off.
Now, you must speak of yourself. Let me show you something. I have grandchildren and great-grandgirls and great-grandgirls, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is, I teach them, I tell them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I praise for them. Now, if they go and do something in which is not appropriate, they know what they're going to hear from me, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're not cutting any road for them, and I don't want them to go the wrong road. So when you say, when you speak of other people, I don't think that's appropriate. You check on yourself. You look within yourself and see if you're doing the right thing.
So, Bremen, I appreciate that, right? You have grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and as a member of the extended family, you feel that you have a responsibility to help them understand and navigate the Bahamas that they live in, right?
Navigate themselves in the proper manner in which to live in the Bahamas the right way.
Right, to govern themselves.
Right.
Right? And so what we're saying is that there are tons of examples of people living lives like that, people who they govern themselves. They make healthy decisions, right?
Hold on.
They make mindful decisions, right? They're conscientious, and they plan out their lives. And these people also experience tremendous oppression or violence. These people, women who go to church and wear the modest clothing and don't hang out with bad men or in dark corners, they experience rape. They experience harassment, right? And what these advocates are doing, they are working to create policies that help to shape environments and communities that help to reinforce the work that you do as a parent or a guardian to your family members. Now, the suggestion, because what I get there is you're suggesting that we can teach your children some things they don't need to know, and you already taught them everything they need to know. But that's kind of myopic and narrow, Bremen, right? It's myopic and narrow because it ignores the experiences, the lived experiences of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, right? First of all, it suggests that bad things happen to people that do bad things, but that's not the case, right? Second of all, it suggests that people who are doing this work are actually trying to lead young people down the wrong path. And what these women are doing is saying that, listen, when Bremen has talked to his young people and tried to reinforce the positive things and the lessons, the safety lessons they need to know, it's also up to the community to ensure that the communities are properly policed. It is up to us, the wider public, to ensure that if we have public transportation, we also have policies in place to govern that space. And we also do the social cultural work that ensures that big dirty bus drivers know that it is not a child in the bus or a young woman in the bus is not his opportunity to shoot his shot or to lead a young girl astray. We're doing the work to make sure that the shopkeeper, that the boy that delivers the water, right, understands that his access to this community is not permission to take advantage of the young or vulnerable people that live in it. And I hope that speaks to some of the social changes or the way that the social change that they hope or advocates like me hope to impact or create. Ms. Wallace.
Yes.
How you doing?
I think it's really important to note that as much as you might think you're doing a great job within your family unit or sort of micro communities, we still have to live with other people who didn't grow up in your household or who were not in your care. We're not living in bubbles. We don't get to separate ourselves, right? Unless you're one of those people that lives behind very high walls and you can just stay back there because you have your own grocery store and whatever, right? But the rest of us, we have to interact with other people. And that means we have to learn how to respect one another. We need to learn safe, non-violent ways of communicating when we are upset, resolving conflict together. We also need people who are able to intervene when something goes wrong or before something goes wrong, being able to step in, knowing the safe and effective ways to stop situations from escalating. Even if you're not able to de-escalate, you're able to kind of stop them right where they are. Mm-hmm. But we don't get to just say, oh, I'm raising my children and my grandchildren, and that's it. That this is going to be all they need to know. It just doesn't work that way, because we live within a broader society, and we have to move away from these ideas that I can just take care of myself and my own, mm-hmm. and we're just going to be okay. And I think we should have seen from what happened yesterday that that's just not the real world. And we have to look at our interpersonal relationships. We have to look at the differences between us and mm-hmm. the way that we work with those differences, or we use them as excuses for discrimination and violence.
All right. I got a caller on the line. Caller, give me 1 second. I have a text here that says, please, ma'am, to balance the conversation, say man and woman preying on the youths. I just want to pause here because I'm almost certain I said people preying on youths, and I didn't make a distinction in gender. And perhaps it's our bias, right? It's our bias that when we talk about predatory behavior generally, we just assume we're talking about men. And if a feminist is saying it and she doesn't explicitly include women, even though she used a gender neutral term, then she must mean men. I think that's an example of gender bias right there, right, Ms. Wallace?
Yes, and there's also the disproportionality.
Right.
By far, the majority of predators are men. So we do often talk about men quite often. That's where we need to put quite a lot of attention. It doesn't mean that we don't recognize that people of other genders are also causing harm and may also be violent and can also be predatory.
Absolutely. Let's get to this caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. I'm sorry, caller. I'm sorry, we miss you. I've got another text here, Ms. Wallace. It says, morning. The social changes your guest is speaking of are being influenced by the same colonial system she said we need to get away from. It's their agenda. If you don't want...
I'm not really clear on what they mean there.
Well, I think what they're trying to say is, these changes that you're suggesting that we make, well, these changes are really being dictated by the same colonial systems that you and the host are saying that we need to extricate or move ourselves away from. And I want to say this, that young women and girls and young boys and young men being able to navigate their communities safely is not an agenda of the colonial powers. Like, and even if it were, that's something that we could co-op, right? Like, combating street harassment and convincing men and women that they should not use the opportunity of encountering people in the street to make salacious or sexually suggestive comments to them, right? Like, that's not a part of a colonial agenda. That's something that you want to do to ensure that your women and girls and young boys and young men can navigate the community safely.
I think there's also a confusion about, or a conflation of colonialism with human rights standards, international human rights standards.
Right.
So there are international bodies, and some of them are treaty bodies, some of these are organizations, institutions, including educational institutions, that encourage the promotion, the expansion, the recognition even of human rights that have been violated, and that violation has been normalized by colonialism and neocolonialism, as well as neoliberalism, capitalism. All of these systems feed into various forms of oppression and social ills that we see today. Mm-hmm. And these institutions, these organizations, these treaty bodies exist because we formed them. We, as people who make up countries, that make up states, said, this is what we need. We need a space where there are people from different countries with different areas of expertise that can develop some sort of set of standards as well as review processes and systems to hold each other accountable and to ensure that we are moving away from slavery. We're moving away from colonialism. We're not settling for neocolonialism, but we are looking for how we can elevate ourselves as countries, as people, as a people, as well as individuals. And we have opted into these systems. We've opted into participating in, for example, CEDAW by choice. We freely said, yes, we read this convention. It sounds great. These are the things that we need to do. We are going to sign. We are going to ratify. We are committing to the reporting periods. Every few years, every 4 years, we're going to show up and report on our progress. We want to hear the feedback, and then we're going to go back home, go back to our countries and figure out how we're going to improve. These are not impositions. This is not a foreign agenda. You can call it an international agenda, an international community agenda, because we've all decided as countries, as governments, as states, that we are going to be a part of this process, not to check a box, but to improve the conditions within our countries for our people, for ourselves.
Absolutely. I've got another caller here, and then I think we're going to go to a break. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
Yes, Aaron.
Good morning.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay. Let me ask you one question.
Mm-hmm.
How long did we sign up with CEDAW?
Ms. Wallace, 1992?
What was the question?
When did we ratify CEDAW? When did we sign on to it?
In 1993. So we're coming up to our 30th anniversary next October.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Now I can ask the next big question in the room.
Yes.
What have we achieved since we signed up with CEDAW?
Oh, wow.
80 years ago now. 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
What have we achieved? Because 95 or more percent of the people in this country don't even know what the hell CEDAW is.
Well, you know, maybe 90% don't.
Hold on.
They don't know what the document is. But I will tell you, I imagine that 90% of the people in this country's lives have been improved because of the work that the people who are working on CEDAW recommendations and meeting those recommendations have done. You don't have to understand the document to feel or benefit from the work that's being done around it.
We don't want to go through this all day. What did CEDAW did in the last 30 years to make my life better, other people's lives better?
Man, we have a domestic violence unit with the police. We have spousal protection orders. So when you in your house and the man come home, hold on. I talking, sir. Dear sir, please don't make me mute you, because we could have a conversation and we get time. I don't have a problem entertaining your question, but you got to let me talk on my own show. Right? We had a domestic violence unit, right? We are paying far more attention to the rape and molestation of young girls and boys in this country, even though we changed the law from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse, right? It's far more focus and protections for young girls who are the victims of incest. That's when the people who are responsible for you are raping you and molesting you, right? Child predatory behavior and abuse and grooming. We have far more attention to the shelters and the children's homes, more resources going there. We have a far greater attention to the abuses that men face because of the work that we're doing around the abuses that women face. I mean, they've been...
We've moved from a desk to a bureau to a Department of Gender and Family Affairs. And we still have a long way to go with that, but we've made some progress.
Right.
It's also important for us to recognize that CEDAW is, it's a convention, it's a document, but it's something that we have to implement, right? We have to advocate for compliance, for the government to take particular actions to move us toward compliance with this fantastic document. Right. You know, signing it doesn't mean that, you know, well, it's 30 years later and we should magically be there. It takes work. It takes commitment. And we know that we have to build political will. We have to be able to mobilize as people to call for the things that we want to see. So one of the things that we're talking about you know, over the past few days has been the gender unequal nationality law.
Absolutely.
All of that, a lot of that conversation is coming out of
the work that's been done around CEDAW.
The review process and the recommendations that have been made consistently to the Bahamian government. We had the referendum in 2016.
Ms. Wallace?
People voted no.
We got to take a break. I'm not sure if you could hear the music in the Zoom room, but when we get back from the break, we're going to segue right into that, right? The gender nationality law and gender rights. You're on the clock with Erin Green. Thank you for calling. Even if you know we ain't going to agree, I appreciate it. Thank you for texting. Hold the line. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
The Water and Sewerage Corporation advises its customers, residents, and the general public that the corporation will commence improvement work on Boyd Road between Nassau Street and Columbus Avenue, beginning on July 4, 2022, for a duration of 8 weeks. During this period, there may be some interruption in water supply, road closures, and detours around the work area. Motorists are asked to avoid the area between the hours of 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience which may be caused and appreciate your patience as they work to improve their level of service.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
We're not always able to see the storms in life approaching, but we can take the necessary steps to be prepared to ensure the safety of ourselves, our loved ones, and our property. This hurricane season, trust J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers. We'll be here to help you get back on track in your time of need. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
To Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, you're on the clock with Erin Green and my guest today, Ms. Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas. And we're having a little bit of heated discussion, people questioning the efficacy or the purpose of CEDAW. What has it done? What changes have occurred in the Bahamas over the last 30 years since the Bahamas signed on to the CEDAW convention? Ms. Wallace?
Yes, I really want to make a connection between, I think it was the last two calls. So we have one person saying, well, I think it was the text saying that these are foreign impositions. These are people trying to control the country. And we hear this all the time, right? Threats to sovereignty that we've ratified these different documents. And then we have someone else saying, well, what has been achieved? We've done nothing.
Right.
And it's important to recognize that this is voluntary. Our participation is voluntary and it's to our benefit as a country, as a people, and as individuals. We can only benefit from non-discrimination and from ending violence against women.
Mm-hmm.
And the document, the convention, doesn't implement itself. It's on us to do the work. Mm-hmm. It's on our governments, of course, to make certain decisions. But we as people, as the electorate, as residents in the Bahamas, we have the ability to mobilize and to advocate for the things that we want. We know that political will is built on the ground. It doesn't happen in parliament. It doesn't happen at cabinet level. It happens here. Mm-hmm. And this is why advocates exist. This is why we have civil society. This is why there are NGOs and there are social movements to push for the actions, the decisions, the policies, the laws, the legal reform that we need to bring equality and to make non-discrimination, the absence of discrimination, our reality. And we're seeing that now in our conversations about the nationality law. So we had this referendum in 2016, people voted no, and we went before the CEDAW committee in 2018, and the committee said, you know, you had the referendum, that's great. We see that the process wasn't the best, and you're still ending up with this inequality, so you need to do something else. Yes, you need to have a referendum to get the consent of the people to change the constitution. In the meantime, you need to handle this in legislation because this inequality cannot stand. And that's where we are today. And the current administration is saying they're not going to bring a referendum. They don't think that they're going to get the yes vote, which they won't if they rush it the way that it was rushed the last time.
Absolutely.
But they are able to make changes to legislation to ensure that we can stop the harm that is being caused to people to women who are not able to pass on their citizenship because they have married a foreign person, mm-hmm. and men who are not able to pass on citizenship because they haven't married the mother of the child.
Right. Now, to the caller, I'm sorry you got lost in the chaos there. The caller who I told, let me speak, you know. And I want to say, you know, to that, what has been achieved with CEDAW. Well, let me tell you what I have achieved and is possible, right? I use CEDAW to cause the Bahamian government to respond to a question, to answer questions. Right? And NGOs, civil society organizations, and advocates can use CEDAW, right? The committee, the convention, the opportunities to report, the shadow report to the government's report, to engage the government when the government refuses to engage advocates and civil society on the ground in the Bahamas. Now, you may be saying, now look here, I ain't interested in the work you're doing either, Aaron. So if I was the government, I wouldn't respond either. But guess what? I just like you, you know. Me and you, we the same. There's no difference between us. We are both citizens that the government refuses to listen to, refuses to respond to, refuses to acknowledge their obligation to. So you can also use CEDAW to address concerns about the status of women and girls. There are other treaties and treaty bodies that you can engage in the same way to engage your state about issues they refuse to respond to you about on the ground, right? This is how it can be used and how it has been used over decades. And to say that you ain't seen nothing, what about the work of the women, I think, from Beijing Platform? Remember Women's Expo in the 80s, Alicia?
I don't remember it personally, but I know about it.
Yeah, I don't remember it personally, but I remember my mother had a T-shirt, right? And she was an integral part of that. CEDAW has helped to create an environment where women can better organize themselves, better organize the work, and create safer spaces for the vulnerable and the victims of violence. It's just one example. Alicia, I've got some more text.
People have the idea. I think people think that this is all coming from some other place, but like you just said, there are Bahamian women who are active mm-hmm. in calling for the development of some of these tools that we're using now. Women from the Bahamas who went to Beijing to contribute to the Platform for Action, who have been participating in the Commission on the Status of Women year after year after year. And there was so much work done in the 70s and 80s and so many gains that we now have language to use. We now have the language of violence against women and gender-based violence, which are pretty new. But these terms were not used before that work, that very important work that involved Bahamian women and women throughout the Caribbean region.
One second, Alicia. Let's take a call and let's take a call before we end the show. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. It looks like let's see. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Ms. Green.
Hi.
I hope you're doing well.
Yes, sir.
I believe you missed the intent of the caller.
Okay.
When he said 95% of the people don't know what CEDAW is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Green, this is a problem we have in our country. Here it is. A government has sent personalities to sign something with the woman in Baintown with her five boys and a man in Foxhill with his six daughters knows nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake we are making, Ms. Green, is the fact that these proposed things have not been brought to the people in the first place. A few people may know what's in it. That's all well and good for them. But then if the woman in Baintown doesn't understand, the man in Foxes with a six girls, he has to participate as well.
Yeah.
Now, I heard you say some things were achieved through the CEDAW convention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to get into that. I'm going to look at our Constitution. What we have right here in the Bahamas, for more than 50 years now, coming up on 50 years, and do you know, Ms. Green, a lot of our people know nothing about the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know that? See, this is our weak spot. We have not taken that document step by step, put it in simple, basic, fundamental language, so that the average person Baintown, in Angliston, in Foxhill can understand.
Now, sir, listen, I am so happy that I took your call. I'm very happy. If you could call back after the break, I'm going to take it again. Because I'm so happy you said that. Do you know that I am one of the shows on this platform, on the public airwaves, that has consistently tried to get Keisha Ellis Hunt on as often as possible with the People's Constitution? Right? I feel you. I understand what you're saying. There are people like me working to make sure that people have access to the thing. Like I say, if you could hold on. We're going to continue this conversation into Guardian Radio AM hour. I'm glad you called. Let's delve into it because there is validity in your critique, and let's get into the nuances. And let me show you how advocates are actively working to change that dynamic. You've been on the clock with Erin Green. We're going to roll right into the Guardian Radio AM hour. Please stay tuned. Ms. Wallace is going to continue to join us, and hopefully I could reach out to Barbados and get my friend from UWE into the conversation. Thanks for joining. Please keep calling, even if the questions and the conversations are difficult. You've been on the clock with Erin Green.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.